across Northern Ireland, on your radio, and on BBC Sounds. This is The Stephen Nolan Show!
Good morning. Well, where do I start with today's programme? We get a statement from the police on Friday. The question is clear, the response is clear. By Saturday, the PSNI issuing different statements with different answers. Anyway, all spelled out in the programme today. The Stephen Nolan Show! Good morning. The only way Northern Ireland has a chance of being in a normal society is if we all know what's actually going on so that we can all attempt to make it normal. And that's part of the role of journalism in this country, that you know what is going on. And it includes the PSNI playing its part in that conversation with you. When you're interviewed by the police, you're asked to be open and honest and transparent. Sometimes you're asked to risk your own safety and trust the police by giving them confidential information. And yet the Police Service of Northern Ireland will not, in 2024, tell you what they know about the current status of the relationship between the Provisional IRA and Sinn Féin. They won't tell you. Except on Friday, they did tell you. And by Saturday, they were trying to fudge the answer they gave to the BBC. So let me lay this out for you. On Friday, the PSNI answered a specific question. And that specific question posed by The Nolan Show was as follows. What is the PSNI's current assessment of the structures, roles and purpose of paramilitary organisations, including the Provisional IRA? And the police answered it. And it wasn't a junior member of staff that answered it. We know who it came from. That statement, the answer was signed off by ACC Davy Beck. If you Google ACC Beck, you will see that in recent times he has been giving public information about the PSNI tackling paramilitaries. And here's what ACC Beck said to the BBC with regards to the specific question about structure, role and purpose of paramilitary organisations, including the IRA. He said, the assessment has not changed. What's the current role? The assessment has not changed. By Saturday, whether higher forces were unhappy with ACC Beck's honesty, whether they were unhappy with the implications that that might give, or whether his answer had indeed been misconstrued by the BBC. On Saturday, the PSNI issued a new statement telling the public of Northern Ireland that the answers that ACC Beck had given had been incorrectly construed. So what's the obvious thing to do? We went back to the PSNI and we said, well, look, we notice in your Saturday statement that you didn't tell the public what the question was. The question was, what's the current status? So how could that be incorrectly construed? And then we said to the PSNI, OK, let's start again. What is the current status of the IRA, the Provisional IRA, with regards to what the 2015 report said in terms of its control over Sinn Féin? And what did the police service say? No comment. We said, are they still gathering, are they still storing weapons? No comment, says the PSNI. They went further, and the PSNI are now claiming that there has been no updated assessment to that 2015 assessment. How is that the case? We said to the police, because in 2020, the then Chief Constable, Simon Byrne, gave an updated assessment to the newsletter. And he told the newsletter that the status was still as it was in 2015. He said that in 2020. So we say to our police force, which tells us it is transparent, we say to them, how come Byrne said that in 2020 if you're claiming there's been no update since 2015? And what answer do the police give you? No comment. So what is going on? We give them an opportunity to retract ACC Beck's statement that nothing had changed. No comment, says the PSNI. So what is it? Are you not allowed to know if the Provisional IRA still exists? Sinn Féin claim they don't. No comment, says the PSNI. I would ask the Chief Constable this morning, how is this about trust? How is this about transparency? We've looked back over the records and we've seen how the PSNI has commented about the structures, the amount of people in, the activity of the UDA and UVF. So how come when it comes to the IRA, it's a no comment? Doug Beattie, the Ulster Unionist Party MLA, is very concerned about this. And he says it does not stack up that the police are saying there's been no assessment since 2015 because Simon Byrne, the then Chief Constable since 2018, regularly updated him that it was still the case all those years later that that 2015 assessment, what was in it, still stood. Have a listen.
Well, I think the important bit to it all, Stephen, is this, that there was an assessment done in 2015. It was an assessment done by which was called for by the Secretary of State at the time, and it's done by MI5 and the Police Terrorism Investigation Unit and other stakeholders, and we got the outcome of that, and that is still in play now today because nothing has changed. And every time we ask, you know, what is the assessment now, we are told that what was agreed in 2015 is still the assessment now. So the assessment in 2015, which we're now reporting on in 2024, is that the IRA's Army Council still control Sinn Féin, are still involved in criminality, are still hiding weapons and still have structures, except it's 9 years on. So 9 years on, that intelligence gathering, for example, that they will have been doing will have started to bear fruit.
We just want to lay out in front of people, in case they think that what you've just said there, how are you coming to that conclusion? Because what we want to lay out in front of people, what the PSNI then did on Saturday after our broadcasting on Friday. So the PSNI put a statement out on Saturday in which they said that the Nolan Show had incorrectly construed what we'd been told when we reported that the PSNI told us nothing had changed. What the police are failing to tell everybody on Saturday is the question we asked. And the question we asked couldn't have been more clear. And this is what they didn't put on Saturday's statement. We asked the following question. We said, what is the PSNI's current assessment of the structures, roles and purpose of paramilitary organisations, including the Provisional IRA? And the PSNI responded, the assessment commissioned in 2015 by the then Secretary of State on paramilitary groups in Northern Ireland has not changed. So, Doug, we asked the police for their current assessment and they told us the assessment since 2015 has not changed. What other way can you interpret that?
Well, there is no other way to interpret it, Stephen, because I've asked this question of the police on numerous occasions, and they've answered me the same way. Since 2018 till now, every number of years, I asked them the question, and they answered the question in exactly the same way they've answered you, and that is that the assessment of 2015 still stands. So everything that was said in 2015 still stands in 2024. And where people can make an argument and say, well, they haven't done a formal a structured assessment, like they did in 2015. The reality is this, Stephen, and people probably just don't understand this. MI5 do collation and analysis continuously. That's why they're in Northern Ireland. That's why they are where they are here.
And the PSNI tell us that they work closely with MI5 on that.
And therefore, if anything had changed from their assessment, which they do on a daily and weekly basis, you know, a monthly basis, if anything had changed, they would have told their partners, that would include the PSNI. So literally nothing has changed since 2015 to where we are now. The difference being, of course, is that those structures that were in place and those issues that they raised in 2015 have been going on for 9 years now.
Well, you see, you say this, but it's just really intriguing, Doug, that the PSNI felt, and they were, we understand they were coming under significant pressure and significant questions. And on a Saturday, they release a statement saying that the assessment commissioned in 2015 by the then Secretary of State has not been subjected to a further assessment under the same framework. So they're saying they haven't done exactly the same assessment in exactly the same way as 2015. Here's their problem. That's their Saturday line. 2020, Simon Byrne, who was he? The Chief Constable, said the updated statement, 2020, was that nothing had changed. So last Saturday, the cops saying they haven't looked at it since 2015 in terms of the same assessment. Their own Chief Constable looked at it 5 years after that and publicly updated it. And then the Garda Síochána, Drew Harris, he said he agreed with Simon Byrne's 2020 assessment. What is going on?
Well, look, Stephen, I mean, it's simple. I mean, we can delve into all different angles here, but here's the reality to all of this. The assessment done 2015 still stands in 2024. And Sinn Féin can make an argument and say, no, the IRA's gone, they've gone away for good. Well, if they have intelligence that states that, then have they gone to the police service of Northern Ireland and gave them that intelligence so they can change their assessment? That's down to them. They're going to have to look at this. But at this stance, at this moment in time, that for me, as an elected representative, the Army Council of the Provisional IRA still exists. It still controls Sinn Féin. It's still involved in criminality. It's still storing weapons. And it's still gathering intelligence on dissidents and other security force elements. That's where I stand here as a politician, because that's all I've been told and that's all I know.
Well, do you? Why are you ignoring what the cops have done on Saturday? They've completely put uncertainty around this now.
Well, I'm not sure that they've put any uncertainty to this, Stephen. I think what they've done is somebody has put something out to make people think there's been another assessment done as per 2015. But the reality is, as I said before, that those assessments, the collating of information and the analysis of information, goes on continuously. It's not just done when the Secretary of State called for it. It's done continuously. So I don't know why they felt the need to put that out on Saturday.
But isn't that the story?
But it doesn't.
In whose interests is it? In whose interests is it not to be clear? We've got a police force here where it's crystal clear they need to be completely and utterly removed from any smell of political policing. So, the biggest political party in Northern Ireland, Sinn Féin, is it the view in 2024 of the 2024 Chief Constable John Boucher that they're still controlled by the Army Council? And here we have all of this shifting of positions within the PSNI. Why?
Well, look, I think the question is still to be asked of Sinn Féin, because it's Sinn Féin who are the ones who are standing making the argument that the IRA Army Council doesn't exist, the IRA doesn't exist, they've gone away, and they've gone away for good. They keep saying that. But the security assessment, but no matter which direction it's coming from whether it's from Garda Síochána, or whether it's from the PSNI, or whether it's from MI5, or any of the other forces, are all saying they still exist in 2024 in exactly the same way did when they did this formal assessment in 2015. Maybe this is a case now that the Secretary of State now needs to get another assessment done that he can release to the media, because that's why it was done in 2015, so it could be released to political parties, to the media, and put into the open.
And when, just again, another piece of the jigsaw, in case people are doubting what the PSNI meant, when we asked what the current position, PSNI position was, the person who wrote that statement or oversaw it being released to the Nolan Show was an Assistant Chief Constable, Davy Beck. So it was right at the top of the organisation that the statement, that the answer to the question, what's the PSNI's current assessment, ACC Beck overseeing the response, which said nothing has changed since 2015, to the point where they sent us the 2015 report. And now they're trying to put uncertainty around this, Doug, and they are. They're trying to say
There's been no assessment, formal assessment, exactly the same since 2015. That puts doubt around this. They know what they're doing.
Yeah, well, I don't think there's any doubt in my mind, Stephen, if I'm perfectly honest with you. And what you covered last week, I think didn't put any doubt either, to be perfectly honest with you, and to be fair to you. I think the problem is that a lot of people were talking as if this was a Secretary of State-sponsored assessment, which was going to be released to all of the media, like the last one was in 2015, and it wasn't that. But that doesn't take away from the fact is that, you know, assessments continuously happen. If the Secretary of State asked for an assessment for tomorrow, for example, he would have it within 24 hours. Why? Because they have the file, the information. It's all sitting there whenever he wants it. You know, because this thing, because intelligence gathering and collation and analysis happens continuously. So for me, the bottom line is, what, you know, the assessment of 2015 stands in 2024. And to me, that's an insidious element to politics here in Northern Ireland.
Are you seeking any clarity from the Chief Constable, John Boucher?
Well, I mean, I'll drop a letter to the Chief Constable, because I do around these things anyway, and I'll be honest, he's very good, and he comes back, and he's very clear as well. But Stephen, I'll say this to you also. I think it was 2 years ago I asked the same question in a letter, and I've also asked face to face, and I get the same answer every single time, and that is the 2015. Assessment still stands. Nothing has changed.
Who did you ask it of face to face? Who?
Well, I spoke to the last Chief Constable in regards to this. So he was the last person who I spoke to.
When, Doug? Can you remember when?
Do you know what? I've asked on a number of occasions, Stephen.
Recent years? Is that fair? This is Simon Byrne you're talking about.
Yeah, it is. Well, I've got to be honest. I think sort of 2018 is when I started asking the question, and I've asked it every sort of periodically after that, and I get the same answer each and every time, that the 2015 assessment still stands. I think, you know, that's been in the media on a number of occasions as well.
That assessment, and this is what we broadcast on Friday, it includes the following, that the Provisional IRA continues to control or have a relationship with Sinn Féin on a peace footing. Absolutely, it says that. So is it your understanding that Simon Byrne told you, right about 2018, yeah, that still stands? It also says that the Provisional IRA continue to store weapons. Now, if Davy Beck sent a response to us asking what the current situation was by saying 2015 still stands. So are they now telling us the IRA do not store weapons? Can we at least have clarity around this?
Well, I don't know if it was 2018 when I spoke to Simon Byrne, but it was sometime after that. What I was going to say is, since 2018, I've asked periodically. So I certainly asked the question after 2020 and received the answer that the 2015 analysis still stands. That's where I am. That's what I think. That's what I've always been working on. Until somebody stands up and says, no, something has physically changed, or there is a change to the analysis or the collation of the information that they've got, then nothing's changed. 2015 is where we stand at this moment in time. And regardless of what words are, whatever confusion that some people might have in regards to this, the reality is that the assessment that was made in 2015 is where we are in 2024. And I again put it back out to Sinn Féin. If they have other information which says that the IRA has gone and they have gone for good and the Provisional Army Council doesn't exist, then have they taken that information to the Police Service of Northern Ireland? If they have not, then why not? They should. So that's where I am in regards to Stephen.
Okay. Doug Beattie, thank you very much indeed. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Doug, thank you.
So what is going on? What's going on? 03030 80 55 55. Sinn Féin have released a statement saying 26 years after the Good Friday Agreement and almost two decades since the IRA left the stage, the IRA is gone and is not coming back. There is no place for illegal or armed groups in our society. If the PSNI have information on illegal activity, they should bring those responsible before the courts. Mick Fealty, editor of Slugger O'Toole. Good morning to you, Mick.
Stephen.
Like, what this story could have been was an assessment of what does it mean when we have the reality of what is still in place, what's not still in place, what's changed. What this story is, and has become because of that Saturday statement from the PSNI, why would the PSNI not want to be open, honest and transparent with citizens in this of this country who they expect and need to be open and transparent back?
That's a good question, Stephen, and I could ask it of more than just the police. We don't have a particularly open form of politics here. It relies on very often reaction against, you know, the other side, so to speak. Look, I think one of the things that might be helpful here is to ask ourselves, why did that assessment, that formal assessment, take place back in 2015? Because there hasn't been one since. There's been no clamour for one since. No Secretary of State has asked for one. And to be frank, in terms of the public peace, there's been no real reason to have another assessment.
Is it don't ask the question because we don't want to know?
No, I don't think so. I think that's unnecessarily cynical. What if you go back to August 2015, what that takes you back to is the murder of Kevin McGuigan in East Belfast. And that was really the primary reason why the Secretary of State at the time went through the whole business of publishing a formal assessment of what the state of play was with the IRA at that particular time, because members of the IRA were implicated in that particular murder. And if you remember, it created a huge amount of instability in Stormont. Mike Nesbitt, then leader of the Ulster Unionists, as he is now, walked out of the executive. It left the DUP quite exposed. They did this in-out hokey-cokey thing. There was a full-blown political crisis on foot of that murder. And that's the reason why that assessment was done in the way it was done. Now, a sceptic, and it's important that journalists and other commentators are sceptical about these matters, would have to say, if there's no real reason, there's been no reason to have another assessment, is there also any reason to believe that that substantial situation of the Army Council being in control of Sinn Féin, is there any real reason to doubt or to believe that that has changed in any way? Because if there's not, it's really not safe to assume that it has changed in some kind of magical way. As Bobby Storey memorably described it, the Army Council is like a butterfly that has kind of left the scene. You know, it's light, it's ephemeral, and it's gone. And you have to take the late Bobby Storey's word for that. But I think if you're conducting a properly sceptical, not a cynical, but sceptical inquiry, then really you cannot take such statements at face value.
But Mick, when we asked, and I've done some of these interviews, when we've asked the PSNI what's their current day analysis of the structure of the UDA, the UVF, they've answered it and they've told us. When we've asked them, look, many people are in the UDA, UVF, what criminality are they up to? The PSNI have answered it openly, transparently. So why wouldn't they answer any questions? Well, they did on Friday. And then what happened within those 24 hours that they wanted to revert back to? We don't talk about the IRA. No comment to any of your questions about the IRA. What does that say?
It says that there's something wrong within the political system. Look, right from the very beginning of the Provisional IRA, in their Green Book, which was basically a handbook for all IRA volunteers, the top thing that was emphasised at the very, very beginning was secrecy. This is an organisation, when it was in its violent phase, absolutely relied on secrecy for the safety of its own operatives, but also for the success of its operations. Whether that be assassination, whether it be robberies to kind of fund the cause, so to speak, bombings, all the rest of it. All of that, and they became very, very professional at doing that. This is a very highly structured, highly disciplined, highly centralized organization. And that ethic of secrecy has been the one thing that it has carried through from its violent phase to the peace process. And it's very, very problematic because by their denial that they even exist anymore. They've managed to evade being anywhere in the public account. So when we look at the problem of paramilitarism, it's not just the PSNI have this problem. Good journalists have the problem of how do you quantify a secret organization that will not surrender even its own reality to the public gaze.
Sorry, Mick. Look, there is a current day, as you're aware, over recent days, as recent as that, conversation as to whether the DUP should be meeting up with the LCC.
Yeah.
And one of the arguments coming from some of the people within the LCC is, look, we're on a peace footing. We're trying to go away. We're trying to transition. Mm-hmm. And you should not think anything other than that. This is a contemporary conversation about the public's input into a debate as to how we treat paramilitary organisations that are on a so-called peace footing.
Mm-hmm.
How can you talk, and how can one community talk about that if the PSNI won't even tell us their assessment of where the IRA Army Council is at? And one day of the week, on a Friday, they're telling us that nothing has changed and therefore the IRA Army Council still controls Sinn Féin. And within 24 hours, there's a scramble. The PSNI, I'm told, there were many, many high-powered meetings around this at the weekend, and it suddenly becomes no comment.
Yeah.
Like, how can the public have confidence that they can even be part of this democracy with regards to that debate if we've got our police force doing that?
I think that's a good question. And I'd start with that last bit first. A proper democracy should have public participation in debates like this, because we all have an interest in making paramilitarism go away in all of its guises, whether that's the formal stuff. You know, I heard on your show last Wednesday, the whole idea that some are transitioning to an old boys association. No one has a problem with that. That's important. The problem is that we're not having a properly balanced public conversation about this. It's as though we have two ends of the same problem. One is out in the open, partly because loyalism is nowhere near as centralized, controlled, or secret as the provisionals have always been. But how can we cannot really talk about paramilitarism if the public perception is that it only exists in loyalist areas and there is absolutely no evidence of it happening within Republican areas. The very least we need to do is to start looking at the outworking of that, the crime rates, the in every area, regardless of political affiliation of those areas, and get to the heart of the problem, which is organised crime.
The 2015 assessment said there were criminal elements of the IRA involved in criminal activity, like smuggling, is what it says.
Yeah.
Large-scale smuggling. So you go to the PSNI, you know, the person at the top of the PSNI is John Boucher. So you're trying to get an assessment of what is the Chief Constable's assessment. Byrne gave it in 2020. We had it from other Chief Constables. This time, this police force is saying no comment as to whether the IRA is still smuggling. So it's not a no, it's not a yes. The great unwashed of Northern Ireland have just got to tolerate. We're not entitled to know. Is that really the position of our police force? We're not entitled to know. Now, look at this. Here's what's come in from the Northern Ireland office. And this came in to us on Friday. Look at this, Mick. When we asked the same questions of the NIO, guess what they did? They pushed it onto the police. They said the PSNI and security partners continue to work to keep the people of Northern Ireland safe, including monitoring the continuing threat from paramilitary and terrorist groups to inform their operational response. Look what the NIO have done. They've said the PSNI is continuing to monitor the threat from paramilitary and terrorist groups. In other words, the PSNI know That's what the NIO is saying in that statement, because they're continuing to monitor.
Yeah, no, I think, look, this goes back to what you heard Doug say earlier on, is this is continuous. It has to be continuous, because the threat is not always at the same kind of height. And at the moment, as I think Alison Morris said on your show last week, you know, the direct threat, and it isn't from the provisional IRA, that by and large, most of the assessments agree that they are holding the peace and that they're not directly engaged in paramilitarism. The real threat comes from the dissidents. And that it's absolutely important that the vigilance on that is kept up. And this is why I went back to the 2015 assessment to remind people that assessment was on foot of an exceptional breach of the peace process. Yeah.
But this is words, isn't it? This is semantics, because they're continuing, and we know from upper echelons of the PSNI, they're continuing to monitor the paramilitaries. The NIO are putting it in black and white. The PSNI is continuing to monitor. All they won't do is tell you. They won't tell you. They won't tell you what their assessment is.
Well, to be honest, that's partly the responsibility of the policing board, because they're our elected representatives. They're the ones who are elected and nominated by their parties to engage with the police on issues like this. And if there are issues of real confidentiality, which there is within, within the paramilitary kind of threat space, then those representatives are the ones who should be asking some of these tougher questions.
Well, the DUP have told us they're going to raise this at the policing board. We're going to hear from the TUV. Jason and Coleraine. Morning, Jason.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning.
I think this is definitely a really serious issue. Last week we had Sinn Féin constantly changing their statements. Now we've got the PSNI. The two people which are actually in charge of our country.
You've got the PSNI what?
The PSNI has changed their statement. Sinn Féin has changed their statement.
What the PSNI are saying, Sinn Féin haven't changed their statement for a start. The PSNI are saying that the Dolan Show incorrectly construed their statement. And what the PSNI did on Saturday was they sent out a press release but didn't reveal the question that was asked. And that was the material point. The question that the PSNI were asked was, what is the current 2024 assessment of the structures and roles of the provisional IRA?
Stephen, how can there be any trust in the PSNI after? I really actually don't know how I describe it in words. And no matter what way, we were told all last week, and I tried to get on your show, they highlight the hypocrisy of Sinn Féin, and now the PSNI is covering up as well. You cannot say anything bad about Sinn Féin or that Army Council. People one minute are saying are surrounding Sinn Féin, then the next minute they're saying they're not.
Well, look, as a citizen of this country, would you like to know if the Army Council still has any control over the biggest political party in Northern Ireland? Would you like to know?
Of course I would, and you wouldn't.
Well, the police won't tell you what they know about that. They won't tell you.
Well, the Army Council aren't elected. Sinn Féin representatives and Stormont are. I just heard the statement that they came out with there now. And that's a proxy, so it is, because look how much they covered up last week, and they will cover up this week again.
Well, Sinn Féin claim they didn't cover up anything, of course, with regards to the stories around child safeguarding. Jason, thank you. I think, Mick, as we stand back from this, just finally with you, this is about trust, isn't it? This is about the people in Northern Ireland not being treated like fools. This is about people in Northern Ireland being given the respect and the dignity to be told what is happening in their country by their public authorities.
I think so. And this is the problem with the secrecy ethic that previously drove the Provisional IRA and is currently driving most of the actions we've seen over the last 3 weeks with Sinn Féin. And the problem with secrecy is that it does you as much damage as you think it's protecting you from, because it means that people don't have specific information. It means, and it means that they can start wandering off into all kinds of dangerous places and assume you're up to things that you may not actually be up to. And that's quite apart from the fact that, you know, in a democracy, the people decide, but the people need to have sufficient information about you and how you operate and how you keep your house clean, so that they can make an informed decision about what your motivations are, how you're likely to perform going forward, and whether people are actually safe to report things to you of a particular nature.
Mick, thank you. The leader of the TUV, Jim Allister, responding to this story this morning. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning.
What's your assessment?
I must say I find it astounding that the PSNI are trying to obfuscate their own stance on this. And one has to ask why. They were asked a very straightforward question. What is the current status in relation to the Provisional IRA Army Council? And they said it hadn't changed from 2015. In other words, they still control Sinn Féin, they still have arms, they still are involved in illegality. And then over the weekend, we have this attempt to kick up dust about that. Why? Why is the PSNI? Whose purposes is that serving? It suggests to me there is a political motivation in trying to ease the pressure, which the realization that the biggest party in government is under the control of an illegal organization. Let's remind ourselves, the Army Council's illegal organization, there are political consequences, or there should be.
Well, it's the position of the biggest political party in Northern Ireland, and they're the biggest political party because they have that size of a massive mandate that the IRA does not exist.
And who, after the last week and previous weeks, could believe a word they say? I'd far rather believe an intelligence assessment, which we're told still stands, which is very clear, that this illegal organisation controls a legal party, is the controlling force within it, and that illegal organisation still has arms, still is involved in illegality, and all of that.
But Jim, but this is about accuracy, Jim. This is about accuracy. Assistant Chief Constable Davy Beck says it still stands. He was given an opportunity yesterday to retract. His exact words were, has not changed. He was given an opportunity yesterday to retract what he told the BBC, to clarify what he told the BBC, and the answer was no comment. Now, that's from Assistant Chief Constable Davy Beck, but the central command of the PSNI is giving a different answer. They're saying no comment. So they're not telling you that it still stands. They're telling you that they won't tell you whether it stands or not.
Yes, but that's why I refer to it as obfuscating their own position, trying to throw up dust so as nobody really knows what the position is. But they were very clear on Friday that the current position hasn't changed from what it has been, and that's in the context of ongoing monitoring. And we all know there's ongoing monitoring, so of course they are in a position to say whether or not the previous assessment still stands, and they've said it does on the basis of ongoing monitoring. So, you know, it is pretty obvious that neither is what seems to me like a political attempt to diffuse that by playing that down. And the reason they'd want to play it down, of course, is that there are unionist parties sustaining in government this party, which is controlled by an illegal organisation, which still has got arms.
Well, the police are apolitical. The police are not a political police force now. So they don't care whether institutions are up or down. They care about law and order.
Well, one would hope that that's the situation, but when they go out of their way to try and dispute their own statement so as to create confusion, then one really does have to ask, what is the explanation if it isn't a political explanation?
What
explanation can there be?
When the PSNI, so the public know how much we've tried to provide clarity around this. We went to the PSNI and we said to them, look, your public position now is that your statement was incorrectly construed. We said to the PSNI, what is your meaning of the words that you sent? And the PSNI responded, no comment.
So, well, Stephen, it couldn't be clearer. You asked the question, what's the current assessment about the Provisional IRA Army Council? And the answer came back, it is as it was in 2015, namely that they control Sinn Féin, they have arms, etc., etc. So when they say it hasn't changed, then you're entitled to legitimately believe what was said in 2015 still stands. And then they try and say no comment when they're asked, does it still stand? You know, who is trying to fool who, and who do they think are the fools here? The people of Northern Ireland, that they'll have their eye wiped by that sort of obfuscation?
Well, you're an MP. What are you going to do to force on behalf of the people of Northern Ireland an answer out of the police?
Well, we have NIO questions on Wednesday, and if I get a chance, I will ask the Secretary of State about this situation and suggest to him, why doesn't he have an up-to-date assessment, which would be undeniable for all, despite their motivations, which may be political.
Jim Allister, thank you. Paul's in Andersonstown. Morning, Paul.
Morning, Stephen.
Go ahead.
I see we're back in the hysteria again. Listen, can you tell me what the core of this is, this fascination, this fixation with the IRA Army Council?
Well, it's strange that you say that, because I think we were being accused over recent weeks of having a fascination with the LCC. We're accused most weeks of having a fascination with anybody and everybody. Are you interested in accountability? Are you interested in who is controlling who?
Stephen, of course I'm interested in accountability. But let me explain something to you. I'm from West Belfast, as you already know. The IRA are gone. The IRA have been gone for a very long time. And they're not coming back. And that's the fact of the matter. Maybe you should come up to West Belfast and speak to people in West Belfast, because people see this as a nonsense, absolute and utter nonsense.
What do you make of the LCC and the UDA and UVF and the commentary over recent weeks? What do you make of it? Are they gone?
You see, no, they're not gone.
How do you know?
Because it's widely known. It's widely known they're still dealing drugs, they're still armed, there's still 12,000 members of the UVF and UDA.
Should Sinn Féin be controlled by a group of people that nobody knows who they are, as stated in that 2015 assessment?
Sinn Féin are controlled by the people who vote for them.
Not according to that assessment in 2015.
What assessment?
Then
what assessment?
The assessment that was done in 2015, the formal... Right. Official assessment that was done, that was commissioned by the British government, the Secretary of State. Then it was updated in 2020. Despite your police force telling you there's been no update since 2015, the PSNI updated it in their view. Simon Byrne, the Chief Constable in 2020, said it was his judgment that nothing had changed. And now the PSNI don't have any judgment. Or if they do, they won't tell you.
That's entirely to the PSNI and MI5 or whoever it is does these assessments. But okay. I'm telling you that the IRA have gone. The IRA have gone. They're not coming back. They're not coming back.
Paul, thank you.
That's the fact of the matter.
Thank you very much. Now the DUP involved in this story. Let's hear what Jonathan Buckley, MLA, has to say.
Yeah, Stephen, I listened to this on your programme during last week, and I suppose probably I wasn't aware of any fresh new assessment, but the understanding that the 2015 assessment still stands is certainly the basis in which we have known that the current status has been. So I suppose no shock as to its content. I think maybe it has been a breakdown of communication, how the police have originally communicated that, and in sense how news outlets have interpreted that email that went to them.
But the key point here is that if you're the biggest unionist party in Northern Ireland, if you're saying that it's your belief that that 2015 assessment still stands. That is what the police said in their original answer to us. That 2015 assessment, Jonathan, talked about the IRA storing weapons, the IRA gathering intelligence, the IRA controlling Sinn Féin.
Yes, it did indeed, and it was very disturbing at the time. I remember whenever that report was released, and it was authorised by the police at the time, and indeed the Secretary of State, Theresa Villiers. What I will say, Stephen, is that, you know, Sinn Féin are not a normal political party, and I don't think anybody here in your programme could stand to justify that they are. There's been an attempt by some within the media and some within their ranks to normalise their behaviour, but events of recent weeks would show us that they're far from normal. Some of the structures in which their political party operate under are controlled essentially by shadowy figures in the background. And day and daily, I deal with political parties right across the spectrum here in Northern Ireland and further afield. And I don't think I've ever quite seen an organisation that operates quite in the way that Sinn Féin do. And that has essentially probably follows on from some of their legacy structures that are still in place. Now, from the DUP's perspective, we went into government in 2007. Sinn Féin have been in government since 1998. But for the DUP, remember, Sinn Féin did have a mandate at that stage in 2007. But for us, it was the essential that Sinn Féin signed up to the rule of law, supported the police, and indeed the courts. And Stephen, if we think back at that time, you know, maybe that's a reason why we've seen some of the actions that have been carried out in terms of their own structures today. I heard one former TD talk about kangaroo courts. Some of the structures in which Sinn Féin operate under are bizarre in the extreme, can be alarming, and indeed the police assessment of 2015 certainly did alarm us all at the time, and we continue to monitor that, as do the police and security forces.
We have a situation now, Jonathan, and I guess it's about and a journalist's job and politicians' jobs are to make sure that the public are treated with respect. So the question that we are asking is, on behalf of us all in Northern Ireland, the biggest political party in Northern Ireland in 2024, is it still controlled by Sinn Féin? Friday's answer from the PSNI, nothing has changed since 2015. Whatever happened within the power structures of this country on Saturday, the police put out a statement saying that answer had been construed incorrectly were their words. So we go back and we say, well, look, okay, for the benefit of everybody, in the public interest of Northern Ireland, can you tell us what the answer to the question is? And now we have the PSNI saying no comment. No comment as to whether the IRA are controlling Sinn Féin. No comment as to whether the IRA are storing weapons. No comment from the PSNI as to whether the IRA is gathering intelligence on citizens. Now, what's your party going to do about that?
Well, I can't answer on behalf of the PSNI, but if the no comment suggests that the 2015 assessment is still intact, that causes concern for all of us as law-abiding citizens. Remember, again, this is not a normal political party, Stephen. It's not the way that they operate. Remember, each statement day after day, even in recent weeks, has been riddled with inaccuracies and change. And when we look upon Sinn Féin's actions over a course of this past few weeks, but even before that, you know, it's riddled with cover-ups. I remember listening to the then Bobby Storey stand on a stage in West Belfast to say the IRA was like a butterfly, it had flown away. I mean, this is nonsense stuff. And I think that for the police, again, and I am led by that security force perspective, that if there is a need for a fresh assessment, that will...
Well, is there a need for one?
Well, going by the inaccuracies in which you have painted, if the security forces are saying that indeed the 2015 statement or situation still stands, then so be it. We know where we stand with that.
Well, they said that on Friday. Now they then put out a statement on Saturday saying it had been incorrectly misconstrued, and now they won't tell us what they meant. Like, this is our police force, won't tell us what they meant.
Yeah, well, I suppose my reading of their email to you, and I haven't seen the latest correspondence, was that, again, they were pivoting back to the 2015 assessment. So the 2015 assessment was worrying in and of itself. And Stephen, this goes to the heart of, you know, in politics, people have choices. And again, for people that are maybe newer to Sinn Féin, that maybe perhaps have not had an attempt or are not fully understanding of the past in which they've come from, if this criminality and this organisation structure is still intact, I think that is a something for Sinn Féin voters, particularly those that are perhaps newer to the party, that they will bear in mind when it comes to elections, because we're on the cusp of an election in the Republic of Ireland. And I think looking at polls, certainly many voters within the Republic of Ireland are capping on to what's behind the mask. And I would hope that come an election in Northern Ireland that voters would do the same. There's many political parties in Northern Ireland that I have severe disagreements with, but I don't question their commitment to the rule of law and indeed their organisation and structures. Another point that is certainly worth merit, Sinn Féin are perhaps the wealthiest political party on this island, if not further afield. You know, there's huge issues there that need to be looked at in terms of how that money came about, the structures in which they still operate under, and which shadowy figures are still in control.
Well, you talk about money. That 2015 assessment, one of its conclusions was that there were elements of the IRA involved in criminality, smuggling. So if the PSNI tell us on Friday that 2015 assessment still stands, nothing has changed, and now today they're trying to say no comment, will you use your position on the policing board to get clarity for the law-abiding citizens in this country?
Absolutely, Stephen. And I would call again on the police that if they know of criminality, regardless of where it comes from, and I say that very clearly, I'm committed to the rule of law. And I think that if the police know of any political elected representative that is perhaps using their political offices under the guise of other means to take that evidence forward and deal with them in the robust way in which the criminal justice system allows for, there should be no place for it in society. And indeed, maybe now, 2024, that there are political journalists out there and indeed political parties far beyond my own that are prepared to take Sinn Féin on in this manner, because the time now for transparency, and indeed Mary Lou MacDonald and Michelle O'Neill have presided over 3 or 4 weeks of absolute chaos within their own organisation. That's now spilt out into the public domain, and I would hope there would be robust questions and indeed answers of factual regard from Sinn Féin.
Are you also calling for transparency from the Chief Constable and the police?
Yes, I would say that from my perspective, indeed the party, I can't speak on behalf of the policing board members, but if I was on the policing board, the simple question would be, does this 2015 assessment still stand, and is it in need for a fresh assessment? Now, that's a call for the police, Stephen.
Okay.
And if they believe that the 2015 assessment is still appropriate, well then, that is where we know we stand.
Jonathan Buckley, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
As we approach the 10 o'clock news this morning, the questions remain for the PSNI in this country. If you are to have our trust, we trust you with information, will you give it back? Why are you saying no comment when the public of Northern Ireland are entitled to know whether the biggest political party in Northern Ireland is controlled by a paramilitary group? They say they're not, but you're saying no comment. Now, why wouldn't you be open, transparent with the public you serve? That's the question for the PSNI this morning. And how come you answered the question on Friday and then changed it on Saturday? Who got involved? Who didn't like what you said? Good morning. Thank you for being with us today. You know what we do. It's no holds barred. It's frank. It's honest. And it's you at the centre of the news. So if you want to pick up the phone, 03030 80 55 55. We have this situation that on Friday, after the police were asked to provide a current assessment of the roles and structures of paramilitary groups in Northern Ireland, that they said nothing had changed since the 2015 report, which was commissioned by the Secretary of State. It talked about the roles of paramilitaries. It said that the IRA Army Council was on a peace footing, but still gave direction, still controlled Sinn Féin. It said that the IRA, elements of it, continued to be involved in significant criminality. Smuggling was given as an example of that report. And the senior commander within the PSNI who's been talking in recent weeks, 2024 recent weeks, about organised crime, about paramilitary gangsterism. We can tell you this morning, and we have told you at 9 o'clock this morning, that that is who oversaw the response to the BBC. He signed off the response to the BBC, which said that nothing had changed in answer to what's the current situation. But who got involved after Davy Beck said that? ACC Beck said that. Who decided that it was unhelpful that he had put that into the public domain? Because within 24 hours, the police were attempting to tell you that the Nolan Show had incorrectly construed Davy Beck's statement to us. What they didn't put in the public domain was the question that was asked. And the question was clear. What's the current structure and role of the Provisional IRA? So what is going on? William and Armagh. We're not in a situation, William, where the Ulster Unionist Party, the Democratic Unionist Party and the TUV are now saying they want specific, clear answers around this from the top of the police.
Hey, Stephen, I'm long enough to live in Northern Ireland, and criticism for coming from the Unionist parties and co in the past have always needed a counterbalance. Of recent times, they have come in for a great lot of criticism, but talking to the UDA, UDF through the LCC. So a huge amount of criticism, probably brought on by your own reporting too. Now, they've always needed a bogeyman, a threat, an unseen threat in Northern Ireland for those parties to get their support and to develop their policies. And this smacks of just a counterbalance to the recent criticism from the, about the LCC and the bogeyman of the Provisional Area Army Council. Now, that guy in West Belfast is on the ground. He told you, but you probably didn't want to accept it, that there's no such a thing as the IRA. They went away years ago, the Provisional IRA. So, but yet this bogeyman thing persists, has been persisted from the beginning of the state, that they're always under threat and under siege, that something terrible is going to happen.
Why?
And nothing has happened.
Well, tell me this. You have to get your car checked out every, whatever it is, 3 or 4 years, right? MOT. You get regular reassessments of lots of different things in your life. Are you curious? Is it convenient that they haven't done an update? They claim they haven't done a formal update to the 2015 assessment. Is that convenient?
Stephen,
why wouldn't they do an update?
Hold on, Stephen. If you break the law, the police come down on you.
Do they?
And they should do 90% of the time. They do, even the ordinary citizens. Double parking, for instance, as you know. But so the checking is done on a constant basis on which we are keeping to the law or breaking the law. If you break the law, it's reported.
But that's part of this, isn't it? That's the elephant. That's the elephant in the room with part of this, William. And I'm not just talking about people who have questions about the structures, if any, of the IRA. We're talking here about the UDA and UVF. And we've heard on this programme, some people suggest that in order to maintain political stability, what the police do is turn a blind eye. Turn a blind eye to senior leadership of these paramilitary organisations who are on a so-called peace footing.
Well, Stephen, I don't know about that. All I do know is that there's been big emphasis on the loyalist groupings lately. I think this is the bogeyman coming out of the ditch, out of the hedge, to counterbalance all that stuff in this last fortnight or so.
William, thank you. Fred, morning, Fred.
Hello.
Go ahead, sir.
Well, I think we're back to similar to the Cromwell Street Affair, when Simon Bourne sanitised Republican terrorists and sanitised them, just putting them down as gangsterism. But it seems to be all right to discuss gangsterism and racketeering with loyalist paramilitaries, but then you can't do it because Sinn Féin is a secret organisation.
Well, Sinn Féin's not a secret organisation.
The various sections of IRA are secret organisations.
Well, they don't exist according to Sinn Féin. Your police force, your neutral police force, are monitoring the paramilitary threat, but won't tell you what that monitoring has told them. They won't tell you what you know.
But that's a job for a politician to find that out. Because we know that MI5 and all Alexis and Nev still are talking about. And sure, just recently we had a case where someone was taken off for some for having ammunition stored. And I always reckon that.
Listen, Fred, your phone's starting to break up, so we'll say thank you to you, and we will leave it there. And we'll stay across this story this week. There is an absolute open offer for anyone within the authorities. The NIO are essentially saying in their statement that the PSNI do the regular monitoring of this, which in itself is interesting. And to the PSNI, look, all we're trying to do here, all we're doing, is trying to get straight answers for the public, and we're asking straight questions. So what is going on? There is no agenda. All we're trying to do is get a straight answer. And it's through those straight answers that the public of Northern Ireland can engage in this democracy, can decide who they're voting for, can know who they are voting for. And so therefore, you, the police in Northern Ireland, play a vital role in protecting us in this community by telling us what you know. We'll come back to this tomorrow. Now, frequent flyers. This is our next story. How many of you board a plane weekly, monthly, even a few times a year, go on a few holidays a year? What would you say if you had to pay extra cash just because you frequently fly? This is what is being suggested. A jet settler tax on Europe's frequent flyers could slow global heating. It could raise €64 billion a year at no extra cost to most people, a report has found. This is researchers from CE Delft modelled the climate effects of a staggering tax on flights, found the proposal would reduce passenger numbers in 2028 by 26%. And Jasmine Donawala is with us this morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, good morning. And Donica McCarthy, journalist and climate campaigner. Morning, Donica.
Good morning, Stephen.
Well, what do you think, Jasmine?
Look, maybe I'm missing something, and obviously the think tank has thought this through in a lot more detail than I have when I saw the story. But I fail to see how people who are extremely wealthy and fly away each weekend for a trip will suddenly be put off having to pay an extra £100 for their flight. Because if you think this system could work, I don't think you know any rich people. I work with people who take flights most weekends to other European countries for a fun getaway, and they wouldn't think twice about spending £30 on a bowl of porridge at a posh private members club, which has loads of various, you know, flax seeds in it. So they're not going to flinch at having to pay an extra £100 for a flight.
Donica?
Yeah, well, as Jasmine looked at the details of the proposal, it's that each flight, the tax doubles. So, yes, for the first flight, you pay nothing. The second flight, you might pay €100. The third flight, €200. The fourth flight, €400. And by the time you've taken that 12th flight to Europe, you're paying probably €1,000. So that would impact many rich people. And what we're talking about here is fairness. The top 1% take 21% of all flights in the United Kingdom. That has a huge impact on our carbon emissions. And at the same time, we have a crazy situation where our public transport for the rural poor has been trashed over the last 15 years. What this proposal in Britain would do is we would tax the super rich and use that money, £10 billion, to fund the restoration of bus services.
But it's not just taxing the super rich, is it? It would tax people that go on a few holidays a year.
Well, what it would do is actually, for example, the people who take their holiday flight to Mallorca once a year, the working class, they would pay nothing. Whereas actually the average person who, the top 10% take 7 flights a year on average. I did the calculation, Stephen. So say for a couple, let's say a famous TV presenter and their wife taking 7 flights a year, business class.
Seven?
Let's say 7 flights, New York, Sydney, Florida, Caribbean, Tokyo, Paris and Berlin.
Oof.
I did the calculations. 12 tons per person, 24 tons for the couple. And because they're going first class, it's 2.5 times worse. So what that means, Stephen, is that couple will emit 53 tons of carbon. Now, to most of your listeners, a ton of carbon means nothing. They don't know what it means. What it actually means is that couple would have to turn off all their electricity for 106 years before they would make up the same carbon pollution. 106 years of electricity emissions for an average household for one couple flying. It's untenable.
Jasmine?
Listen, I am all about protecting the planet, and I love the idea of taxing the super rich at any point. So it's very unusual for me to be on this side of the fence on this topic, because these people that I know, they literally don't think anything about spending $3,000 on a posh designer scarf. I just don't think this is going to stop people flying. I think if we're honest, it will simply raise a lot of money, which could be put back into other public transport services. But we have to be clear and honest. It can't possibly slow down global heating, because they'll continue to fly. They'll just pay to fly. And if this scheme is just about European frequent flyers, well, our airspace isn't suddenly cut off from the rest of the world outside Europe. There are other continents where flyers would also continue doing what they do. And so how could it make a difference?
Well, there's two points there. It will reduce flights. Yes, you're right. The super, super rich will have, who are billionaires, it won't impact them. But the middle rich, it will affect those, because they won't spend £3,000 on taxes. And the positive thing is, even if they do fly, we're actually funding the rural poor, helping to have sustainable transport. It's an absolute outrage that the 50% of bus services have been slashed over the last 14 years. And this is a way of funding than the rich to fund it. It's a win-win.
You know, I think I read that aviation makes up just 3% of global emissions. So it feels like more of a scam just to take taxes from wealthy people or middle-class people rather than truly changing pollution and our airspace quality. I just think if this idea is about being pro the climate and planet, or is it about being anti-rich and anti, you know, holiday makers? Like, it just feels like there would be other low-hanging fruit that you could get for airspace and emissions rather than just 3%.
This is the ultimate low-hanging fruit. Ultra-rich people polluting our planet and causing problems for poorer people. What could be lower fruit than this? Are you actually saying it's moral for a rich person, an average rich person, let's say a TV presenter, to emit 106 years worth of electricity pollution each year? Is that moral?
Paul's in Craigavon. Morning, Paul.
Hi there, Stephen. Stephen, they seem to be focusing on a lot of the everyday people use on flights, what they may be doing for business or holidays, et cetera, et cetera. But what about the likes of Elon Musk's rockets going into space? What about all those rockets going up every other day to put satellites into space? You've seen that Starship, the amount of combustion and the fuel that was using. How much carbon footprint have they analysed? How much that's generating on our environment?
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's another example of the super rich trashing our planet. A private jet in every hour uses, I think, around 2 years worth of carbon emissions.
Okay. Donica, thank you. Jasmine, thank you. Paul, thank you. 030 30 80 55 55. So there's been an update as to how they're going to try to tackle the traffic congestion that lots of people are getting caught up in Belfast. Representatives, you heard on Nolan last week from the hospitality sector, were calling for a pause to the roadworks in the build-up to Christmas. There's been a development. Department for Infrastructure now saying that they will stop all non-essential roadworks on key routes into Belfast between the end of November and beginning of January. So the roadworks stop in December. It begs the question, had they this worked out months ago when they planned it? Weekend closure and works in the Sydenham Bypass, which have led to long tailbacks, they'll also be stopped from Monday the 25th of November, or should I say, paused. So has this been the pressure, the outcry from the public, which has shifted John O'Dowd and his department? Well, the DFI say, Department of Infrastructure, they say, as in previous years, there will be an embargo on all non-essential work on key routes into the city between the end of November and beginning of January. Yeah, but they didn't tell you that this year until now, did they? CEO of Hospitality Ulster, Colin Neal, with us this morning. Has this been
morning,
people
Stephen.
Pressure, Colin, or have they always planned to do this, or what's going on?
Well, like, as you've commented, there was no sign of it. And indeed, look, we'd called for a reinstatement of the historical embargo that was there. So I think whatever has come about here is good. Now it's out in the open and we know it's happening. I would indeed encourage them to start it a bit earlier, because Christmas starts before that, really, for towns and city centres. And it's important this applies across all our towns and city centres, because it's really important. That time of year is critical for retail and hospitality.
So what have you engaged with them? Have they engaged with you?
No, we did. We, along with retail and I, we wrote to the minister, and indeed, obviously, we put a public call out for it as well. So, say, you know, yes, I'd like to claim we changed the world, but, you know, possibly this was going to happen anyway, but it's good now that they've actually clarified
but
that.
But it's not enough for you.
Look, ideally, I appreciate it's a complicated issue, but I think, you know, there are roadworks in the city that could be taken away sooner, particularly if you look at one I keep seeing all the time is Dunbar Link up the side of the new University of Ulster. There's been cones and lane closures there for weeks, if not months, and very little work going on.
And that is something that I have noticed in different parts of the city. And look, there may be operational reasons, but you see these cones zoned off. I'm talking about peak time traffic here. Mornings, 8 o'clock in the morning, going home, 5 o'clock at night. And there's no workers, not a sinner, in some of those areas where they've zoned off.
That's it. And look,
can we do your head in the optics of it? Now, maybe we should get an understanding what's the reason for it.
But look, I mean, are there opportunities, those ones, to remove them for peak traffic, to put down metal plates over a hole, or if they're waiting on something that they can't progress for a couple of weeks, is it a case of put a bit of temporary tarmac over it? I think we can be much more pragmatic and ease problems just by looking at roadworks individually and going, because every one creates a pinch point.
So when do you want the roadworks stopped?
Look, ideally for us, it would be the middle of November, because that's when Christmas really starts. I think it's also important we get the message out, you know, because look, TransLink and the department are right. We do have to shift away onto more public transport, but that's not going to happen overnight. But I think we need to get out to people and say, look, you know, these traffic jams we've seen in Belfast City Centre are primarily the rush hour periods, you know, morning and evening. So it's to reassure people, look, you will be able to get into the city centre. You will be able to get into our towns and city centres.
It gets into your head, the uncertainty. So I'm supposed to be going out to dinner at 6 o'clock tonight in Belfast City Centre, Shaftesbury Square, actually, right? 6 o'clock tonight. And I turned around last night and I said, I'm not sure if I'm going to go, because I don't want to sit in an hour, 2 hours of traffic after it or before that, and I just don't know what the situation is anymore.
And that's my fear, Stephen, is that, you know, people tend to hear the main headline a lot of the time and don't sort of read further. And my fear is we just have a sign up that's saying, you know, the city centre's closed. And the challenge there is, you know, if we do not make sure our city centres and our town centres are accessible during this period, people will vote with their feet. They'll either shop online or head off to out-of-town shopping centres. And from a hospitality perspective, even in that casual shopping thing, we lose out on the lunch while you're shopping, the cup of coffee, the staying on for an evening meal. And it also affects people, like yourself said, booking to go to a function because it gets, no, it's too difficult, I'll just not bother.
Colin, thank you. Good to talk to you as always. Jim in Lisburn. Morning, Jim.
Oh, hi, Stephen. It's all very interesting, this congestion thing. It seems to have come out of nowhere, Alice. But one suggestion of mine, you know the way we used to do more hybrid working sort of a while back, but now a lot of offices and government departments are saying, oh, you must come in either 5 days a week or a minimum of 3 days a week. Why, for a couple of months, don't the likes of these big government departments who pull all their workers into Belfast, down into the Sydenham and States, you know, people, places like Clare House, all those kind of things, why don't they say, listen, we're going to knock this back to 2 days a week and we'll try and work our rota?
Oh, so you're... That's interesting, actually.
Just
so you're
the
suggesting
in the first place.
Your suggestion is government can control, have an element of control here. They can control their public sector workforce in terms of this. You're talking about the civil service here, aren't you?
Yeah. You know, you go down the Sydenham Industrial Estate there, you have big places like Citibank.
It's interesting.
You have Clare House down at the bottom there, which is a massive office facility. You know, all that goes down over the M3 from the West Link and then from Bangor up the Sydenham Bypass. Why not say to people, listen, you know, just for 2 months until January or whatever, until they get all this stuff in Belfast sorted out, you know what? We're going to relax it and do a little bit more hybrid working.
I promised you all when we were talking about this weeks ago that I would ask the question, and I forgot to. Every time we go to America and we're travelling during the night from one city to another, there's major roadworks going on in America. They schedule it for overnight when people are asleep. Are they doing any of these roadworks here in Northern Ireland at night time? Are they doing much of it overnight? And if they can do some of it overnight, why can't they do a lot more of it overnight? We'll ask the Department for Infrastructure today to give us a breakdown of that and what the operational consequences would be around that. Robert Nice, Belfast. Morning, Robert.
Stephen, you know, these cases...
Oh, it's you! It's you!
No, hold on. Wait a minute.
I know that, I wouldn't have put you on.
I know you wouldn't have put me on, but I didn't know the BBC paid to get people's...
Are you not busy with Frank today?
No. I'd like to know why the BBC's paying for certain individuals paying for their teeth.
I don't know what you're talking about. Get to the point.
I'm talking about your man, Pat. His teeth, sorry for him to get his teeth done. Nobody else.
This
the
is
BBC's
like
paying for
some
it.
Type of it's insider joke. What would you like to say this morning?
What I would like to say is very simple. You know about the traffic congestion in the city centre?
Yes.
Well, you touched on it. These guys that are doing the work, they're 8 to 5 guys, and then they're down tools. On their way the next day.
We understand that they are doing late night work in the Sydenham Bypass.
At the weekends. There's someone doing it. There's a couple of times I went up the Sydenham Bypass, Stephen.
Between 10 p.m. and 6 a.m. they had been doing some work. I think the pertinent question is how much of the total work is going to be done when we're all asleep? Are they actually getting out there and trying to move? Is John O'Dowd operationally directing them do as much work as possible when there is nobody on the roads? Or is he not doing that? And if not, why not?
Stephen, another point nobody has raised. See the traffic lights in Great Victoria Street? There are hot spots in Hart Street. It's very simple. They control the lights. They can extend the lights for an hour, 2 or 3 minutes. And where hot spots are, and let the traffic flow. And they could do the same in the other parts of hotspots. They could extend the traffic lights in a couple of minutes. That would help things too, Stephen.
What about your man's suggestion that government proactively encourages more people to work from home?
Well, you know, as people know from COVID, Stephen, when COVID kicked in 2020, Monday is the quietest day in the roads because people work from home.
Oh, is it?
Oh, yeah, check out. Mr. Teeth brought that up to you last week.
Monday and a Friday. Okay, Robert, thank you. Good morning to you. Thanks, everyone, for listening today. We're going to stay across this developing story with the PSNI and why they're deciding to say no comment to basic fundamental questions about what is making our society tick and their assessment of the gangsters, the paramilitaries, the people who try to intimidate us. We want our police force to be open and transparent with us. And the Nolan Show will continue to drive those questions right into the heart of the PSNI. We'll see you tomorrow.
The biggest show in the country. Listen again on BBC Sounds. Tweet @Stephen Nolan.